Moncrief on News Talk.
Today is World Albinism Awareness Day, a condition that affects people all around the world and in this country too. So we asked Jonathan de Burka Butler to go meet some of the community in Ireland. Good afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you getting on?
So, like, 1 in 18,000 around the world have albinism. What would the figures be in Ireland?
Well, Sean, we don't know for sure, but it's thought to be around 1 in 10,000. So it's more prevalent here if we compare it to the average. Now, one of those with the condition is 32-year-old Jessica Nimwelon. Now, she's from Cork, as you'll hear, but she lives and works full-time in Dublin. And I started by asking her what albinism actually is before asking her how it affects her life.
Albinism is a genetic condition. The parents both have to be carriers. With two parents that are carriers, you have a 1 in 4 chance with each pregnancy of having a child with albinism. So lucky for me, I was the one in my family. I have a brother and he doesn't have albinism. It primarily affects the skin, hair and eyes. Now, obviously, there's different subtypes, but the type of albinism I have, it affects my ability to produce melanin, which is what gives you colour in your skin tone, in your eyes, in your hair. And that also plays a role in the development of the eye in the womb. So I'm registered blind since I was a child. So I walk with a white cane. Now, I do have a little bit of sight, but it would be very, very minimal. Like, I can only read the top letter in the doctor's eye chart in the office.
Okay, so we're sitting here now. I'm about 2 feet away from you. What can you see, if you don't mind me asking?
So I can see your face as you're sitting there, but I can't tell what colour your eyes are. I can't tell what colour your eyebrows are. I can see that you have really thick hair. And I suppose just even looking around me here now, like, I'm aware of my surroundings, I suppose, because I live here. I'm aware that there's someone out the window at the moment, but I can't see if it's a man or a woman, if it's a young person or an older person. So I suppose the further things get away from me, the harder they are to see. Obviously, it affects my ability to drive, so I can never drive a car, which is probably a good thing.
How did it affect you growing up?
Like, I never realised I was any different because I don't know what it's like to see properly. So I don't know what I've lost. But I suppose in school, it was very much a case of, like, I was just, like, everyone did their best to try and treat me the same as all the other kids in the class. I suppose the first time I realised I was different was when I had a special needs assistant. But up until then, like, I mean, I'm in a classroom where I'm relying on sound. So it's basically like learning how to read and write with your eyes closed. So it's challenging. But I suppose I was lucky. I was like an intelligent kid. So I got there. Bullying wise, it was a bit harder. Now, I still have kind of a few friends from school. But it would have been tough, I suppose. There would have been one or two instances even from school that kind of have never left me. No physical bullying, I suppose. A lot of, like, you know, isolation, because, like, the kids don't know any different, but the parents see you as a different child. And they, like, I had a parent say to another parent about me once, well, you wouldn't know what to do with her. I really struggled with the isolation.
It's interesting, actually, because you've mentioned this and around the world more than once about albinism on the continent of Africa. And there's a kind of a superstitions connected to it as well. So is it more or less prevalent in Africa?
It's very strange when you think about it, but it is more present in places like Tanzania and Malawi, where somewhere between 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,500 have the condition. And given the climate and the poor healthcare system there, you can imagine how awful it must be to have the condition there. Mm. And it's not just the medical impacts that people have to deal with. There's also the social stigma and superstition to contend with. So I spoke to Dr. Mark Wheeler and his wife, Carol O'Dea. They run the Irish branch of a charity called Standing Voice. They go out to Malawi every 6 months to run clinics for people living with albinism.
We worked for 6 months in a village in Malawi, Cape Maclear. In a clinic run by a Kerry woman called Mags Reardon. And in that village, there were 8 people with albinism. And we used to see them wandering around with severe sunburn, cracked lips, problems with their eyes, problems with their vision. So I decided I would look at their skin because I've got a big interest in dermatology. So I invited them to the clinic one afternoon and examined them. And I was shocked, really, by the degree of sun damage, the sunburn they suffer with on a daily basis, and also two of those people had skin cancer. So I felt, you know, there was no national program at that time. There was one dermatologist for 17 million people. And when we came home, that vision of those people with albinism just stayed with us. And so after a year or two thinking about it, we decided we would try and do something about it.
It often seems strange that the numbers with it in places like Tanzania and Malawi are far greater than those who have it in Europe. Why is that, do you know? And what are the statistics around that, do you know?
The statistics are hard to come by. But generally speaking, one in 1,000 people in East Africa, one in 1,500 people would have albinism, whereas globally, it's about one in 18,000. Why is that? Well, you'd think it would be a genetic disadvantage in the sun. And I don't quite understand why that gene hasn't become less and less or more rare. But I think the fact that people in, a bit like Irish people, we tend to marry Irish people, or Irish people marry Irish people. I mean, the communities in East Africa tend to marry within their own community, and so that maybe have concentrated the gene in that population.
Hi, I'm Carol O'Dea, and I'm married to Mark. I've ran a GP practice here for a number of years. I retired, and I'm basically working on fundraising administration now for the Irish end of Standing Voice. Well, the cultural impacts are enormous because they're basically the bottom of the pile. They have a disability, but also it's a disability that's associated with a lot of superstitions. So, you know, they're constantly in fear of being attacked. And we have like patients we know will arrive to the next clinic because we go every 6 months to the same area. A young girl came back and her whole arm chopped off. And so you can imagine a mother's fear in the evening if there's a sound outside their hut.
I mean, this happens surprisingly frequently still in Malawi. And it really, to a Western, you know, to Western eyes, it seems, you know, mad that this is still happening. But it is based in a deep-seated understanding or belief in black magic, witchcraft, call it what you may, traditional beliefs, whereby the body parts of a person with albinism are going to confer on you some magical powers. And I think, so to give a context, most of the times when we go out, we hear of a report of an attempted attack, an actual attack, a mutilation, or indeed a murder. And these are often very vulnerable children who are snatched from their homes at night. Now, the perpetrators are usually paid and they're poor people, but above them are people of power. These ancient beliefs, these myths and black magic, they are still very pervasive throughout society. They're not just held by people who are illiterate. They are held by people who, you know, have positions of power who are obviously literate and educated. And that means that it's incredibly difficult to stamp out.
So they're not just treating people, they're also dealing with those superstitions. And you did meet somebody from Malawi who has albinism.
Yeah, we did. I was down at an event down in the parish hall in Port Leash that was being run by the Albinism Fellowship here in Ireland. And I bumped into a woman by the name of Grace Massa from Malawi. She's 44. She's been living in Ireland since 2022. And because of her condition, she actually has refugee status here. Grace, why did you move to Ireland?
I moved to Ireland for my peace of mind because I have issues with abuse, fears of being harmed, because back home we don't know who is hunting for our body parts of people with albinism. I have buried my own colleagues with albinism, which have been dismembered, and that was very traumatizing. And I've been also there burying my colleagues with albinism dying from skin cancer because the sun is just too much, and the wound started when they were young, and before they are 40, they're already gone.
So who else did you meet there?
Yeah, well, as you can hear in the audio, there was quite a few people at the event. There was lots of blonde hair. And when I sat down to get the recording gear together, this young man walked over to me and started playing with a hula hoop beside me. He was asking me who I was. He was very curious about the recording equipment. And because his sight wasn't the best, he came right up to it to take a closer look. So, of course, I took advantage of that and I asked him if he wanted to talk to me. So this is Adam Duffy, and then afterwards you'll hear his mum, Kitty.
I'm Adam Duffy. I'm from County Monaghan. My hair's white, but the good thing about that is it's really unique and not many people have white hair, so you have to cherish it. In my class, there's 28 people. 15 of those are boys and 13 of those are girls. My books are bigger, they're easier to see, and on the digital books, you can zoom in as much as you want and see it more clearly without having to get enlarged books.
You play Gaelic football. What team do you play for and what position do you play in?
I've been Alamo in under-12s. I usually play in forwards, so I can get the ball more easily.
I'm Kitty Duffy and I'm Adam's mum.
An awful lot of Albinism Awareness Day is about education. And Adam goes to school, he goes to a normal school. How much or how little do his friends know about his condition?
His friends are brilliant. They know a lot about his condition. We've been open right from the start. They were all in preschool with him. And they know about the white hair, they know about the visual impairment, they know he has to wear sun cream, more so than they would. They also are subjected every June 13th to a little talk by Adam. He'll stand up in his class and he'll tell them and he'll give them sweets. So they're well aware, yeah, they're well aware of his visual impairment. He's flying in school, yeah. He has an absolutely fantastic visiting teacher. He also has assistive technology. So there's a lot of work goes into making the curriculum accessible to Adam. And there's a lot of people that help. So the school have been brilliant down through the years.
Well, it sounds like Adam's got plenty of support there.
Yeah, Adam's doing quite well. And his situation is in stark contrast to Jessica, who we spoke to earlier. The support she had in school were very up and down. Now, she stressed that that's changed over the years and supports are much stronger for the likes of Adam these days. Despite the lack of support that she had in her childhood, she's managed to thrive. But as you've heard already, she's a straight shooter and she doesn't sugarcoat it. So though she's positive, she's very positive in fact, she admits that living with albinism is not easy at all.
You can absolutely like live a full life. Like I'm living independently, paying my own rent. Now, if anyone wants to pay it for me, no problem. I'm working a full-time job. I go out, not every weekend, but I go out some weekends with my friends. I've done holidays with my friends. I've done solo breaks. Like you can absolutely live a full life. And I suppose that's the thing. My parents had those fears for me. It was never fears about the big stuff. It was fears about doing the more normal stuff, but you can achieve them.
Have you ever in your life resented it?
100%. As a teenager, I went through a phase of wanting to dye my hair any colour but blonde because I felt I was so, it was so obvious that it was me. And I really, like, I suppose I really tied it to the albinism that, like, my hair is only this colour because of albinism, which is true, but by the same token, my friends were going into hairdressers paying hairdressers to have the same colour hair. I would never lie about it. I have days where I wonder what it's like to see. I have days where I get frustrated that my eyes are tired. Part of the albinism I have is that I have an involuntary movement in my eyes called nystagmus. And that makes my eyes really tired. It takes me longer to read. It takes me longer to complete tasks. And when you're trying to work full time, especially like in kind of a high pressure environment, it's like when you get frustrated about your eyes being tired and there being absolutely nothing you can do about that, you do start to resent it a bit. But I suppose I've come on my own journey with it. Like I've accepted it and it's just part of me now and I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for it. But do I still have mornings and days and nights where I resent it? Absolutely.
Jonathan, thanks for telling us about World Albinism Day.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.